presentation is why BMP best management practices are working in the F-grade agriculture area in South Florida. Samira, yours.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Zen Li, for the introduction, and thank you all for being here. I do want to acknowledge my co-authors, Timothy Lang and Django Bada, but I want to acknowledge also Forrest Izuna, who's here in the audience, who started the BMP program in the Everglades agricultural area before I was even there, quite a few years before I was even there. And some of the data actually goes back to when he was involved in that research project. So it's nice to see him here. He's at the University of Minnesota now. This year, 2015, the South Florida Water Management District in South Florida celebrated 20 years of BMP accomplishments, 20 years. In August, the South Florida Water Management District Board had a proclamation about the success of the MPs where they congratulated the growers in the area. So I want to give you some background why this program has been successful. It's been going on for 20 years, and every year we have achieved the load reductions that were required by law. So this is a mandatory best management practice. And why it's a little bit different from other areas in the U.S. where they've been trying the BMPs, most of them voluntarily, and they have not achieved the success that we have had. The Everglades agricultural area is a unique area. It's south of Lake Okeechobee. There's a lot of, actually it's mostly all organic soils. 80% of the crops in the area is sugarcane. It has flat topography, shallow soils. The bedrock is marl and limestone. Because this area was a swamp, it was really a wetland, it was drained, and the soils have to be actively drained. So the drainage occurs through pumps, canals, main canals, and as well as farm canals and ditches. And water leaves the EAA first to go into storm treatment areas before it goes into water conservation areas and the Everglades National Park. As I mentioned, the crops in the area is sugarcane for the most part, but there's a lot of vegetable production. All of the winter vegetables, actually quite a bit of it, is grown in South Florida now, as well as rice in the summer and salt production. The soils, organic soils, they were drained in the early 1900s for agriculture production. I'm not going to talk about soil oxidation, but this is a problem in South Florida. The subsidence of organic soils is due to organic matter oxidation. Come on in. Yeah. So as I mentioned, because they're organic soils, because it's a swamp, it's a wetland, all the soils are drained for agriculture. And we have two kinds of canals, the water main canals that are controlled by the water management district, as well as farm canals and ditches. So the main canals supply irrigation water, but for the most part, they are drainage water. And you'll see if you ever visit the Everglades Ag area in South Florida, it's really a lot of canals and pumps everywhere to drain the water. But South Florida has pumps everywhere too. So in 1988 or the 80s, there were huge concerns about phosphorus leaving the EAA. It's definitely, as I mentioned, organic soils, a lot of nutrients, oxidation, a lot of phosphorus leaving the area. So there was concern about phosphorus leaving the Everglades agricultural area, which prompted a lawsuit that was settled eventually in 1994 with the Everglades Forever Act. So the Everglades Forever Act had a regulatory program for the EAA specifically, and the goal of that program is to reduce phosphorus load by 25% compared to a pre-BMP pace period from 1980 to 88, I believe. So, but this is the key, one of the key why our BMP successful, that the research started with the University of Florida and the growers in cooperation with the Water Management District and the Florida Department of Environmental Protection before the BMPs were implemented. It was on-farm research program on a lot of farms and started in 1992. The mandatory BMP program had 100% growers' participation in 1995. If you did not have a PMP permit, you could not grow crops in the EAA. So part of the Everglades Forever Act is the BMP regulatory program, but you also have the establishment of stormwater treatment areas to clean up the water further. So the BMPs would reduce the phosphorus in the water up to a certain point, and then the STAs would follow. But it also had a regulatory part in terms of a monitoring plant of phosphorus coming in and out of the basin as a whole. the Water Management District evaluate the performance of the basin every year. They have a report that is comes out every September. They do have tax incentives for the growers. So this is a BMP program that is paid by the growers. They tax them $24.98 an acre since 1995. And because they've achieved the baseline, they've achieved the reductions, the tax incentives, is this tax would not increase, basically. It has remained stable. And also the program, the restoration plan, had a research and education program, which was very component of the EFA. So the regulatory program has three parts mainly. Every farm in DAA has to have a BMP permit for discharges into the Water Management District Canal. They have to have a comprehensive BMP plan and a discharge monitoring plan. I think this is one of the few areas in the world where non-point source pollution is treated as point source pollution, and we know exactly how much phosphorus is discharged by each farm. The research and training is conducted by University of Florida. I'm the one that's in charge of this program now, but as I mentioned, scientists before me, Forrest Izuna and the audience, have started that program in, you know, early 90s. It is in cooperation with multiple growers in the EAA, and it is funded by tax on the EAA growers. So there's another tax that they tax themselves, $5 an acre, and that's where the research money and the education comes to. The basin performance is done by the Water Management District, where they track trends and figure out if we have achieved the load reduction every single year. So this is the BMP table that the growers in the A have to choose from. It is a minimum of 25 points. A typical BMP permit includes points from water detention, fertilizer content and application control, as well as sediment control. So very common things to every BMP program, I would say nutrient spill prevention, application control, which is banding, side dressing, mulch beds for fertilizer production, application with an Airmax, a pneumatic applicator on corn and sod. So the unit application control are very straightforward and every farmer does them. We have water detention BMPs also. So the permit, the BMP permit, indicates if discharges can start after half 1.5 inches of rain, depending on the rain gauges and the farm. So a lot of water detention happens on the farm so that they reduce the loads as well as the concentration. Another big part of the BMP is to control the generation and the transport of sediment. So this is a big one, and we're trying to control as much as possible the generation of organic sediments because it has a lot of particulate phosphorus in it. So the district goes and audits these farms and looks at maps if they have cleaned their sediments, if they're controlling their aquatic vegetation, etc. But sediment generation and transport, as well as reducing soil erosion, but we don't have a lot of soil erosion, mostly it's sediment, is a big one. Other control practices for sediment, again, anything that slows down the discharge of water, the velocity of the water in the canals, and reduces the transport of sediment. So you have things as culverts with risers to slow the ditch drainage, cover crops in the summer to reduce wind erosion on these organic soils. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about results of a long-term study. So this is when the BMP program started, and this is a 10-year study on 10 farms in the AAA. So the research, as I mentioned, started before the BMP program was mandatory. One of the objectives, and I'm going to show you just basin data, not specific farms, is determine long-term trends in phosphorus concentration and loads after they implement these BMPs. The AAA basin is divided into four sub-basins in general, S5A, S6, S7, and S8. We took long-term data set from us and from the Water Management District, and to see what kind of reductions we have on sub-basin basis. And we use trend analysis, Season, Mann, Kendall trend analysis. I want to show you first the inflow in terms of what comes into the EAA. In addition to rainfall, of course, the irrigation water comes from Lake Okeechobee. And as you can see, I'm going to concentrate on the concentration as well as the loads, the four sub-basins, as well as the whole EAA. The inflow concentration is only increasing, however, have increasing in the S5A basin. So the irrigation water has definitely phosphorus in it, and quite a bit of it actually in the S5A basin. And the load has not changed during that 10 years. But if you look at what comes out of the basin in terms of trends, again, in that 10-year period, the outflow concentration was decreasing in the S5A, S8 basin, no changes in the S6-7, as well as outflow loads also decreasing except for the S6, S7. So in general, the basin as a whole was holding quite a bit of phosphorus, and we can see that from individual farm data as well as the basin data. If I look at the basin performance in general, the overall performance, again, this is from the Water Management District and shows the before BMP implementation period, kind of a partial BMP implementation from 1993 to 95, but this is when the BMP started with full BMP implementation. This is total phosphorus load reduction. And you can see the line house decreasing quite a bit, and it's consistently below the 25 or higher than the 25% load reduction that is required by law. Actually, in this year, water year 2015, we had 79% load reduction. The phosphorus concentration, which is flow weighted, was at 47 micrograms per liter. What we're focusing on now is really focusing on sediments generated by aquatic vegetation. So we're focusing on organic sediments, because these organic sediments, if they move with the water, they're highly labile and highly transportable, basically. So this research project, which we started a few years back, about 4 years back, evaluate floating aquatic vegetation management practices, their impact on water phosphorus load. We look at phosphorus speciation from the drainage water, soluble reactive P, particulate phosphorus, dissolved organic P, etc. We're looking at conductivity, calcium, so a lot of different parameters. But also we're focusing on canal sediment properties, different properties including phosphorus fractionation. The experiment rationale that if we leave the canals free of floating aquatic vegetation, the system is aerobic. The sediments are inorganic in nature for the most part, and there is a minimum flux and minimum flux from the detritus, because there is minimum of that organic material. But if you have a lot of floating aquatic vegetation in the canal, the system becomes anaerobic very fast. There is a lot of detritus, a lot of organic sediments with quite a bit of phosphorus flux in the canal water. We are on 8 farms in DEA. There are 4 pairs of farms. This is a paired watershed study, so paired farm study. We paired 2 farms that are very similar in characteristics, and we have 4 pairs of them. We just finished the 2-year calibration and started the treatment period. The treatment basically is to have really good management practices to reduce the floating aquatic vegetation, but mechanically or spot spraying, not having this infestation versus really heavily infestated farm canals. Just showing you a little bit of results, very preliminary results. We established a calibration period, so a relationship. This is the blue line between each of the pairs. So we have a base period. What is the relationship between the load relationship, phosphorus load relationships between each pairs of farms? And then we're looking after the treatment, how does the relationship change? For this farm, there's no changes yet. This is all over the place. Actually, we have increases in P loads from the treatment farms, and this one we have quite a bit of decrease. It's just 1 year of treatment period, so it's just too early to say at this point, because I think the system is still equilibrating. Field research is not easy. It takes years in the making, and we're very fortunate that we have growers that fund this kind of research for 4 or 5 years on their farms. Lastly, the success of the BMP program, in addition to the regulation and in addition to the research, has been extension, extension, extension. If you have seen the keynote speaker on Sunday, he said it is communication stupid or something like that. So communicating your message to the farmers is a very important part of what we do. We always have outstanding speakers. We do it in Spanish and English. Actually, both of these speakers here are from their farmers. This is from US Sugar and King Ranch. A lot of extension documents. And reducing phosphorus this is from the Water Management District in conclusion, I would say, and this is their conclusion, that BMPs from DAA have prevented 3,000 metric tons of phosphorus from entering the storm treatment areas. So this is what it is with BMPs versus what it could have been without the BMP program. So in conclusion, the BMP program is a really unique story. It's a great success story in South Florida. It is a regulatory program, but I think a lot of the BMP programs in the country probably will be heading that direction. The basin payload reductions have averaged more than 50%. The trend analysis that we've done in the past has confirmed what the district shows on a basin-wide decreasing payloads at the farm level, and now the focus on managing sediments, organic sediments, as well as floating aquatic vegetation. And thank you.